Welcome to Hear the Deer. I'm Eric Nahm, Milwaukee Bucks beat reporter here at The Athletic. Not joining me, as always, is my good friend and normal co-host, Trevon Edwards. Trey is sitting this week out as we have some special content for you, which I will tell you here in a little bit. But before I do that, just want to catch everyone up. We've had some special episodes. There's a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar episode that hopefully you guys all enjoyed last week. But the Bucks have pretty much just kept on winning because that's really what they do this season. 4-0 since the All-Star break, a 20-point win in their first game back after the All-Star break in Detroit, 126-106. Then they beat the Philadelphia 76ers by 21 on Saturday. Then really two interesting games in the back-to-back. Road back-to-back, Washington, D.C., then Toronto in the last 2 days. They win 137-134 in overtime on Monday, and then 108-97 in Toronto on Tuesday. And I mean, I think the game against the Pistons isn't all that interesting. Pretty much what you'd expect. The Pistons aren't very good. The Bucks are quite good. They blew them out. And then it's this weird thing with the Bucks this year where no matter what the outcome of any game is, no one's actually, I shouldn't say that. Any outcome other than the Bucks losing doesn't matter. At this point, that's what is expected. So the Bucks beating the Sixers by 21 and getting shut down by the Bucks for a second straight time doesn't mean as much in people's minds as the Bucks losing on Christmas to the Sixers, because that is a possibility. That makes things more exciting and less inevitable than the Bucks ultimately winning. And, you know, I think we saw the same thing again last night against the Toronto Raptors, where they go to Toronto, the site where they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They lose their final, or they lose their final four games to the Raptors, obviously four in a row, but they lose three games in a row in Scotiabank Arena in Toronto. And I mean, the Bucks got punched in the face last night. Like, first half, like, they just, you know, had the Raptors kind of take it to them. They were on their heels and they responded. They looked calm and composed in the second half, and they just won, and they looked professional doing it. And it, again, the show, like, everyone else is gonna, you know, talk about, oh, you know, could the Raptors actually beat them, all that, but the Bucks just kind of keep going out and winning, and pretty much all we ever hear is, well, let's see if the Bucks can do it in the playoffs. And that, I think, after last year, it's kind of deserved. The Bucks had a great regular season. This year is even better than last year, but they had a great regular season last year, so people aren't going to trust them in the postseason. And really, they're going to hold them to a higher standard than any other team. If any other team looked like the Bucks do this year, they'd be getting crowned as the new exciting team. But instead, this is kind of what the Bucks do. And I just think the most kind of interesting thing the last two games has been Chris Middleton essentially taking over games, and Chris Middleton being the guy in Washington. Giannis Antetokounmpo falls out. Middleton goes for 40. He ends up scoring the Bucks' final 9 points. I thought, again, in Toronto last night, Bucks aren't totally able to close it out. The Raptors get within 5. Middleton goes for 5 straight points. The Raptors get within 7. Middleton hits a 3. Like, Middleton was the one that kept kind of closing the door. And I just think it's huge for this Bucks team to have that second guy. And here after the All-Star break, Chris has kind of gotten a chance to prove it, which dovetails nicely into the conversation that we had during the All-Star break. During All-Star weekend, everyone from The Athletic was hanging out. Everyone was having a good time, which meant I got to talk to some of my friends here at The Athletic. And that means I got to record with Dave DeFore for the Nerdy She Wrote podcast. You can catch it on the back-to-back feed if you want to catch it there. If you like what you hear from Dave, go check all that out. But that wasn't all. We also had Seth Part, now former analytics director with the Milwaukee Bucks. He joined the conversation, and obviously he joins conversations with Dave quite regularly as well. And then Fred Katz came by, and Fred Katz came by because, as he told me on Monday in Washington, no one in the world knows more Chris Middleton stats than him. I said, I probably do, but he wanted to try to show off all of that knowledge on Monday and also in this podcast as well. So we go around all the things with the Bucks that are interesting. Other than Giannis, really. We tried to stay away from Giannis and talk about everything else. So we talk about Chris Middleton. We talk about Brooke Lopez. We have, I think, a pretty fun time. So before we move on, I want to take a moment to tell you more about the great things going on at The Athletic. The Athletic is home to 400 of the best sports writers out there, covering every major team in every major league in the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. That includes people like Jason Quick, who I will continue to aspire to be more like as a writer. The way he covers the Blazers is just incredible. I don't know how he can tell such vibrant, such interesting stories, but I swear every week he has something that I just wish I could write. Like, he is so incredibly talented, and that I just marvel at his work. So hopefully you can catch some of his stuff over covering the Blazers. And It's just crazy how many incredible writers we have, because the other week, some Bucks fans might also be Milwaukee Brewers fans. We got a new Brewers writer, which is interesting and fun. So you should go check him out, Will Salmon. He has the Brewers covered for all of us here at The Athletic. But there was a story about Zach Greinke, who's one of my favorite Brewers of all time. Jason Jenks, Alec Lewis tag team this one for The Athletic Kansas City, and wrote about how Zach Greinke's crazy. Like, that dude is just crazy. He was telling guys in spring training that hitting the baseball is easy, even though he is a Cy Young pitcher. And then in his first ever major league at bat in spring training, he hit a home run. Like, he's just, he's golfing barefoot. Just an insane person, but super interesting. And that is a story that you literally could not find anywhere else at The Athletic. No one else is writing that. No one else is pursuing that. No one else is going to be able to do something like that. So that's why you got to check out The Athletic, because simply put, we have the best sports newsroom on the planet. But you don't have to take my word for it. You can see for yourself by signing up for a free trial. Head to theathletic.com/hearthedeer to save 40% on an annual subscription. That works out to $3 a month for total access to some of the best sports coverage in the world. What are you waiting for? That's theathletic.com/hearthedeer to save 40%. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. Here is our conversation.
Hello and welcome to a special Nerder She Wrote Hear the Deer crossover episode. We got Seth Partnow. We got Eric Name. We're live All-Star Weekend. And Eric, we have got to just jump right in. Brooke Lopez is going to win Defensive Player of the Year. Chris Middleton is going to be All-NBA. Giannis is going to be the unanimous MVP. Bud has a good shot at being Coach of the Year. They're going to win 70 games. Are they going to win a championship?
I mean, I think right now, the Eastern Conference, I struggle to think of who's going to actually beat them. I think everyone has Jason Tatum's performance against the Clippers fresh in their mind, and now the Celtics might look like they're the team. At the start of the season, the Sixers were definitely the team. At the trade deadline, the Heat were definitely the team. We just go through, essentially, anytime anything happens in the Eastern Conference, it's not, how is this team affected? It's, can this team beat the Bucks? Because that's just how we end up talking about things, and it's easier to frame things up in that way. But I mean, to me, the conversation continues to be like, this team is good. They appear to be even better, and they're getting better, but they're not beating the Bucks. Like, I just can't see in the Eastern Conference. Then you get into Lakers, Clippers, how the Bucks match up against those two teams. They've performed well against them thus far this season. Those are probably closer to toss-ups, but I think in the Eastern Conference, I struggle to see a team that is going to take them 7 and then beat them in 7.
This is, of course, slightly weird topic for me to get into, but just from a general standpoint, I'll slight exception with that, in that when the season started, we kind of thought the Eastern Conference was going to be a two-team coronation. It was going to be, you know, some nice, entertaining series between some of these other teams, and then the Bucks and Sixers play in the conference finals for all the marbles, and that's what it is. I think that the fact that there are these, you know, the 76ers are still a playoff dangerous opponent, I think we have to say. I mean, you look at the Christmas Day game for evidence of why. These other teams, the Celtics, the Heat, the Raptors, them being better doesn't mean that they would be favored to win a series, but it's kind of like the more chances you have for something to go wrong, like all of a sudden instead of that second round series being 90-10, it's 80-20. And, you know, just from a, you know, for the nerder side of this podcast, from a, you know, a combined probability standpoint, that makes a great deal of difference. So it's not necessarily which of these teams is definitely going to, but you're starting to stack probabilities of there being danger now when around earlier than there was. And it doesn't have to be just the 76ers, because we thought before that if someone beat Philly before, then it would be just like a walk. And I don't think, like, yeah, the Bucks will be favored in a playoff series against all those teams, but there's none of 4 other teams that will make the conference finals that you say that's just a walk.
I understand it, but I watch these teams and, like, if you catch
them, you don't believe in math, so.
But if you catch them on a, like, right, this is the non-nerder side. But, like, I just when I watch these teams, like, I don't see a consistency level that is necessary in the postseason. Like, these teams are all, like, nice, but
you don't need consistency. You need 4 times.
This is true.
And yeah, so I mean, it happened last year.
It did. I agree. Yeah. So I mean, I do think the road has definitely gotten tougher for the Bucks, but I still struggle to see, like, I just don't see any of these teams in 7. But again, teams can get hot. Fred VanVleet can turn into Steph Curry for 3 games.
Is Fred VanVleet he going to have another baby? That's the biggest question.
That's a great question. Right? No.
And by the way, as it happens at All-Star Weekend, it is now a party.
Wait. Fred VanVleet is like one of the 5 or 10.
He's very good 3-point shooter.
Best open 3-point shooters. So it's like,
and he's
like,
wide open.
Treating like that's some like lightning striking event. This is like subtweet to, not subtweet, this is actual tweet to like Bucks fans, like Fred VanVleet getting hot for, that's like something that happens.
Yeah.
Like, right. You know, and that combined with Danny Green not being able to throw the ball in the ocean, he came out about even. So like,
and then Nikola Mirotic couldn't make a shot either. Like he's a good open shooter, I believe.
Fine.
Okay. All right.
Fred Katz is in the house.
Can I just add something you guys are forgetting about this conversation? Like, what if the Wizards get the 8 seed?
It's a great point.
Come on. Like, you guys are talking about Bucks and Sixers and Fred VanVleet. Gary Payton II.
A Bucks legend, Gary Payton II.
Yeah.
The Wizards are going to get the 8 seed here. Is basically what you're saying.
I don't know.
Is that a prediction?
It's more of just a depressing commentary on the Eastern Conference. That they're 2 back in the last column of the 8 seed right now.
Is it the worst offense in NBA history or the second worst?
It's defense, you mean?
Defense, yeah.
Yes, but since they traded Isaiah Thomas, they've had played some bad opponents, and they have like a 102 defensive rating over their last 4 games.
Yeah,
and they've
sustainable.
They've slid. Yeah, third best in the league. So now they're there.
With their offense, third best defense in the league. Now we got something.
Yes, they've slid their number down.
A dangerous 8 seed now.
Last year's Cavs of 116-8, and I believe right now they're down. They've been like kind of slithering between like 116 and 116-7 the whole year. They haven't gotten to 116-8. They've gotten to 116-7. They're at 115-3 now.
Bucks potentially could run into a buzzsaw in the first round.
Chris Middleton could be dropping 51 every night.
I was just going to say, I would actually really enjoy that series.
Wait, would they just sit Giannis if it was the Wizards?
He played against the Pistons last year. Yeah. So I think he would play. He would probably go about 20 minutes a night, and it'd be fine.
That is the most disrespectful thing I've ever heard anybody say about a playoff team. The MVP would go as 20 minutes, and you'd load manage him during playoff series, and it would be fine.
It did happen last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you?
Oh, no. I'm just saying that concept is the most disrespectful thing you could ever say about a playoff team.
The Bucks are first in pace, correct?
Yeah.
And their defensive rank right now is...
They're one.
Fred and I had this discussion last night about how difficult it is to have to play at a high pace and also play good defense. Somehow they're able to manage it while the Washington Wizards are not. What's the difference?
I just think you look at that Bucks team and there's so much defensive talent that, you know, you go up and down the roster and there's just guys that can play. And Brooke Lopez is insanely underrated defensively, where it's just the narrative on him was, offense first guy, doesn't really defend, you can't put him in a pick and roll, like you can't do any of this stuff, like he's just gonna get played off the court. And it turns out he's one of the best rim protectors in the league. And if you put him in a drop scheme and your guards work really hard, which the Bucks guards do, it all works out. And he's really good and he's really smart and he moves his feet really well. And they've just, I don't want to say stumbled onto something because this is very purposeful that this is how they're going to play Brook Lopez. But you have Brook Lopez doing that. You have Giannis as the free safety, which is just not fair that he can just roam and do literally whatever he wants defensively, whether that's play passing lanes, whether that's, you know, pressure on the ball, whether that's getting a block from the backside. He can do all of that. And then Eric Bledsoe, people don't touch him when they try to screen him. Like, he just is able to avoid it. I wrote about last year. He's insanely good at not getting screened, getting over the top of stuff, top locking. Just, he's great in those situations. Then you had a bunch of really good team defenders. Chris Middleton is a great team defender. Dante DiVincenzo is a great team defender. Wesley Matthews is a great team defender. You just keep stacking up guys that are really good defenders, and you have the best defensive team in the league.
Personnel matters. People talk about defense like it's like just effort.
Right.
Oh, personnel is a thing.
Not on this show.
Yeah, not on this show.
We actually debunked that, where we went in depth on how effort is great, but if you don't have defensive
necessary
skill,
but not sufficient.
Yeah.
Yeah. Effort's wonderful. Right. You're not going to be good at anything if you don't put in effort.
Yeah.
You also need to have talent and long arms and athleticism, quickness, and a mind that allows
that's
you to go
part.
Into the right places. I mean, people think of it as like, oh, he's trying hard to go into the right place. There are guys who I cover who try really hard. It's just like, it doesn't matter how hard you try. If you don't know where to go,
yeah,
you don't know where to go. I think also, like, everyone you just named is like a great team defender as a
right.
vet.
Yep.
Like, Troy Brown's 20 years old. I bet you Troy Brown, knowing his personality and knowing his intelligence,
yeah.
really smart dude. I bet you he becomes a good team defender down the
sure.
line. But he's 20 years old. He doesn't have that wealth of experience.
Well, and this is
him.
The thing about the Bucks. What they've got is they have a bunch of, it's a veteran team. And so they do yep. have, like, it's a bunch of adults that know how to play basketball, and that has inherent value. And then you add in, you have the best player in the league, like, at his peak. And, you know, you've got Chris Middleton, who, you know, he's, like, been, like, a top 12 player this year. And Brook Lopez, who has been, you know, one of the five best defensive players in the league. I mean, that's a recipe for disaster for everybody else.
Wait, Seth made a face.
Chris Middleton has been awesome this year.
It's incredible.
This is something that has come up in debate sort of offline, is if Chris Middleton is in the running for kind of an all NBA slot.
I think so.
Maybe, man, that's a big call.
He's what, 50, 43?
Yeah.
What is he in the line now? 90?
Yeah,
that's what I thought. Yeah, so he's 50, 43. How many guys, I don't know, I mean, I guess Curry probably has gone 50, 43, 90. How many guys in the league, maybe Nash did it? I mean, it's got to be so...
Brandon Clark is going to be close. He's going to be 50.
Well, he's going to be 60, 40, 60, 80.
40, wow. 80.
Yeah.
All NBA third team center, Brandon Clark.
Yeah.
I mean, how many guys with that? And he's been lately. I mean,
and with volume.
And volume, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, over 20, 50, 40, 90, like, three guys in the history of the game have done it. Like,
well, the big knock on the Bucks is now out the window. The big knock was it's Giannis and a bunch of nobodies. And now it's Giannis and you've got Chris Middleton, who's, you know, this going to be an all NBA guy, right? Like, it's just the narratives are starting to disappear as we move through this season.
And I mean, like last year, so the big narrative was, all right, so Giannis had a great regular season, but, you know, what happens when he gets to the postseason? It was a stupid narrative, but when he got to the postseason, he was really good. Mm-hmm. Like, he was really good again. And ultimately, Kawhi outplayed him, and like that is a big part of why the Raptors advanced and the Bucks didn't. But that one disappeared. Now it's, okay, is their number two good enough or what may whatever you might want to say about Chris Middleton? Well, it turns out if you take out one guy that takes up a bunch of possessions offensively, Malcolm Brogdon, and say, Chris, you take all those. You're now officially number two. Because the big thing last year was Chris was great when Giannis wasn't on the floor. He's
right.
been great without Giannis on the floor for a long time. So he's been great in those situations. But when they shared the floor together and you put all the starters together, all of a sudden Chris was like fourth in usage. And now this year it's, hey, Chris, you're back in charge.
Right.
Like, you're going to be, it's Giannis and then it's you. And now he's great in those situations. And that's where you're seeing like, all the volume numbers come up, all the scoring come up. It's because of the time he spends together with Giannis. Him without Giannis has never been a problem.
Right.
And that's kind of this strange thing where it's like, oh, well, he's not good enough. Well, actually, when he gets to be the main guy, like, he's plenty good.
Yeah.
Now it's figuring out, with both of us on the floor, can we both be badasses?
Well, what they ran into in that Toronto series, this season they've kind of gone away from. They were a one-trick pony. Yep. It was Giannis take the ball, dribble into this wall, and let's hope that we can get a pass out of it or you can finish at the basket. And now it's not that.
I would guess Bud is really tired of me asking this question, but every time they do something unique or different offensively, whether that's Middleton post-ups, Middleton on the left wing, whether that's Brook Lopez on the block, you know, whether it's finding a mismatch and posting up Giannis, like whatever it is, if they do a lot of it in a game, I ask them, hey, is this a part of offensive diversity and getting better this year? And if they don't do it, I ask, hey, why didn't you post up Brook more? Like, this seems like something you guys could possibly do to be efficient, because Brook Lopez is one of the most efficient post scorers in the league. I got to say, probably 3-4 times a week, he gets a question from me about offensive diversity. And to their credit, like, they're working on it. I still don't know if they've gone like all the way to feel totally confident that if someone throws box and elbows, like if you throw that normal defense that Giannis sees, that wall that Giannis sees, I don't know if they're quite ready for someone else to just take over, but they're more prepared than they were last year, and that is at least a step in the right direction.
I want to get your guys' take on this. I'm bringing this back to Chris Middleton. No one on the Bucks plays minutes, and Giannis is 30-31 a game, something like that.
Yeah. Yep.
Middleton is like 28 something, right?
Correct.
And I was looking through his quarter breakdown. This was like 2 weeks ago, so I guess maybe it's adjusted a little bit. But the common cliche that people go to is, well, they kill everybody so they don't play fourth quarters.
Yeah.
Not really the case with the way they rotate guys. He's averaging basically the same minutes in the fourth quarter as he is in any other quarter.
Right.
How much do you think that should come into consideration when we talk about Chris Middleton as, like, in terms of postseason accolades and All-NBA? Because he, at some point, even if you're really good and he is physically capable of playing more, he's just
the
not.
Counting stats.
He's just not. Like, if you're giving really good production and someone else is giving equally really good production, but that other person is giving really good production in 5 more minutes a night, well, that other person is technically adding more on the aggregate to their team throughout the year. And I know it's difficult to simplify to that degree, and it's not within Chris Middleton's control that he's playing 28, 29 minutes every night.
You're making an argument for innings eating, though. Right? Like that,
yeah,
that
yeah.
Like, but you would give a Cy Young to a guy.
No. I'm not making the argument for innings eating. I'm not saying that the guy who throws 240 innings with the 3.5 ERA is better than the guy who throws 200 with the 2.8.
Okay.
I'm saying the guy who throws 240 innings with the 2.8 ERA is better than the guy who throws 200 with the exact same ERA. So I'm wondering if you're on the fence, like Seth, I want to know, like, where do you fall on this in terms of the
I think that's a really good question, and I think that's when you come down to like one of the top 6 forwards this year in the NBA, and considering that like 3 of them are off the table already. You got Giannis, you got LeBron, you got Kawhi. Those are booked. Get out of there. Depending on like what you call Ben Simmons, he ends up being a guard in these things, so that's probably still a spot open. But then, you know, there's some pretty steep competition for those last 3 spots, and then it kind of comes down to what do you value, you know, Middleton's efficiency versus, you know, the workload that an Anthony Davis or a Jimmy Butler is putting in.
I think
right
those
answer
are your 6 forwards,
yeah,
by the way.
Right answer.
Named them all. I think it's Middleton, Davis, Butler, LeBron, Kawhi, and Giannis.
Well, then, I mean, the question is who's doing more for their team, like between Middleton and Bam? Like, that's a, you know, I think that's a legitimate question. Like, can the Heat function without Bam?
Probably not.
Can
is that
the
a
Bucks,
fair question
can
to the, ask?
Well,
like,
yeah,
it's not
no.
Chris's fault that he plays with Giannis.
Well, but at the same time, like, you somehow shift some of that usage to George Hill, who's missed a shot sometime this year. Like, you know, so
you can't
it's,
prove that.
There's no evidence.
There's
of
no
that.
Evidence of yeah. George Hill missed shot this season.
Yeah. So it's you know, on some level, like, you don't want to completely argue, you know, that arguing for replaceability would almost be like an argument against, you know, the Brook Lopez Defensive Player of the Year candidacy, because Robin's been pretty good too.
Right.
But they're twins, so
and
that
they play
actually
with Giannis.
Yeah. So I don't think it's a tough question to answer, but I think volume matters. Like, I do think doing it in you know, 33 minutes and more close games is significantly more impressive than doing it at high efficiency in 28 minutes when you're up 15 the whole time. And, you know, on some level, yes, he gets credit for them being there, but it's
and he gets credit for them being up 15.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Because he's really freaking good.
Yeah. Does he though?
Yeah. I mean,
will he actually get credit for them being up 50?
I mean,
he was
a no-brainer all-star, and we're talking about him in consideration for all-NBA team. So, yes, I think in the conversation for a guy who's a secondary scorer on a team playing 28 minutes a night, you know, let's not be like, we're hating by saying it's not a lock.
But
like,
we can only speak for we.
Yeah. Right. Now, and the voters are going to not.
No, but he was like last year's like, is he going to get in or not? Like, he's a no brainer all-star this year. So right. It's like he's getting his due.
Well, know? And the narrative is, again, has switched. Right. Giannis has help now. And that was the big thing coming into the season, is that that was the knock on the Bucks. Well, it's just Giannis and a bunch of bozos.
I would slightly take issue with something you said earlier about like. He was. I don't think you're right when you say like he could always do this, because he's doing things like, talk about volume. Like, a big thing is his. First of all, he's always had your favorite thing, the too small on a, if he's posted up on a 6'3" guy, too small. Yep. But his willingness, not just his ability, because he's always been able to do it a little bit, but his willingness to get the ball in the perimeter, size a guy up, and take a pull up three. That is one of those things that has.
He was great at that last year,
but he didn't do it as much.
Sure.
Like, that's what I mean. It's like, when he decided to do it, it was kind of a multi-year process to get him. No, you don't want to dribble into that 18-footer. Shoot the three-pointer. It's better. You make that shot too. And now that he's like, nah, I'll take five of these a game. Like, that is one of those things that just makes him better.
Well, he has a shot profile of a star.
Well, he is so ridiculous from mid-range this year. Right. I know this is going to make Seth cringe, but he is, the math checks out, man. Yeah. What is he from mid-range right now? Like, mid-50s? He's over 50 for sure.
Yeah, he's.
It is wild. I mean, we talk about George Hill hasn't missed a shot, but I feel like Middleton, especially lately with this hot streak that he's on, when he's shooting 57% from three over his last however many games. And I just feel like every single time that he pulls up from 16, and there's a big difference between a 14-footer and a 20-footer. I'm squinting at Seth right now to see if he's.
There's Seth that, loves
there's,
the mid-range.
There's some out. Difference.
Seth loves the mid-range.
But he is otherworldly from that area. Like, it's amazing.
And I was going to say, this year is like a best of both worlds kind of thing. Because Chris used to be that. When people were talking about DeRozan and how good he was from the mid-range, Chris was like slightly less volume, but just as good. And then last year, go ahead.
No, the one thing, like, I've never been a big DeRozan guy, but the one thing DeRozan could do was, he's one of the few guys who could draw fouls in the mid-range.
Right.
So, like, he took a bunch of what are bad shots, made him decently well, and was also getting fouled on five of them a game. So that kind of does a pretty big job in terms of turning that, like, you know, okay, he's, you know, you get eight free throws off of mid-range shots, that bumps your efficiency a great deal.
So just on mid-range shots, Chris has always been right around DeRozan's percentages, fouls not included, and last year it dipped, like it disappeared, because Bud was like, dude, you got to shoot threes, like, we're no more of this stuff that you like. Go shoot threes. We need you to shoot threes off the dribble. If you get a big man, that's what you're doing. We're not going to have you on the little guard. Like, you're not going to take those turnarounds. This is what you're going to do. And it turned into a fight, and they didn't like it. And Chris got benched on December 1st against the Knicks. Like, it was a spot where he wasn't doing that anymore. And then slowly, as the year went on, he kind of started to do some more of it. Like, they kind of met in the middle. And this year, it is fully like, all right, Chris, all that stuff you like, you get to do. But also, all that stuff that I like, you're going to do that too. And now you have both those things, and you have this guy that's averaging 20 points a game, and he's 50, 40, 90, and it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. I think they're going to win the title. I just, as long as the offensive diversity is there, I think they're going to win.
All right, let's Brooke Lopez. I know Seth wants to talk about him because he talks my ear off about Brooke Lopez and how good he is defensively all the time. So, Seth, the floor is yours. Like, tell me why you think he doesn't – actually, tell me the thing that he does that you don't think people realize.
I think, obviously, that you talk about him playing in a drop scheme and being very effective. I think he's also better – at moving his feet than he's given credit for also. Like, yes, he prefers to drop, but he still has mobility in that drop scheme that allows him to contest shots, that allows him to come for backside blocks, that allows him to pick up guards. So he's not just this, you know, a lot of big guys, they play a drop scheme and it's basically moving a traffic cone, like back 6 feet and right. Still giving a guy a corner to turn. He's just got to go around a little deeper in the floor. Like Brooke can still like move and contest and get back to shooters. And his mobility has improved to the point where he is he's not like, you know, going verticality on guys. He's giving guys space, letting them make a decision with the ball and then contesting. And so what ends up happening there is he's not, you know, you see a lot of these, you know, the classic examples, whole Hassan Whiteside selling out for a block, giving up an easy dump off for a lay-in. Brooks not doing that because he's giving you space. And then as you come to him, then you make a decision. Okay, now I'm going to go get that. And he's become just spectacular at doing that. And then, you know, he's a classic example. Both Lopez brothers are, he doesn't grab a lot of rebounds, but you're not getting one.
Right. Like, he's a team rebounder.
Like, you know, Giannis is averaging whatever he's averaging in rebounding, and it's sort of because he's got, you know, this pulling guard, you know, clearing out the lane for him to swoop in and away we go.
Okay, I know you got to go, so we'll wrap up there, but yeah, little crossover episode. Hear the Deer and Nerder She Wrote. Thanks.
Hopefully you enjoyed that conversation. I enjoy that I get to disagree with Seth and we get to go back and forth, and he brings up things that, you know, I could never know from the outside. He knows things from the inside of that Bucks team, that Bucks organization, that he can just drop knowledge on all of us. Same thing with Dave DeFore. As a reminder, you check him out on the back-to-back pod feed here at The Athletic, or check out Fred Katz, all the incredible work he does about the Wizards and all of, I mean, just he's around. Fred is fantastic. So check out all of that as well. As far as this podcast, we will get back to normalish. If there is a normal to be had in the NBA, we will try to do that next week. Trey will be back. We'll get back into it. The Bucks start off the week with a strange back-to-back, Charlotte and then Miami. Malcolm Brogdon and the Pacers come to Milwaukee for the final time this season. And then at the end of next week, Giannis, LeBron, Lakers, Bucks. That one will be fun. So we will have a whole lot to talk about next week. Be sure to join us here for Trey, for all the guys that we got to record with during All-Star. For myself, Eric Name, this has been Hear the Deer. We'll talk to you guys later.